Discourse on Habeas Corpus by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 4, Habeas Corpus, Application, Law, and Effective Legislation. As with the scholarly sources, in many cases I'll read, so that context is understood, portions of decisions or other documents, and then we'll repeat the significant portions so that they're not lost. But the context needs to be understood to properly apply phrases or sentences from a court decision. Now, this first case is not a habeas corpus case. It does, however, represent what the relationship of the people to the federal government is, and the extent, or should I say, limitation on the federal government with regard to its authority in matters that should be between the state and the individual. The case is from 1833 and is called Barron versus City of Baltimore, B-A-R-R-O-N. It's in a Supreme Court decision at 32 U.S. 243. From the decision, the Constitution was ordained and established by the people of the United States for themselves, for their own government, and not for the government of the individual states. Each state established a constitution for itself, and in that constitution provided such limitations and restrictions on power of its particular government as its judgment dictated. The powers they conferred on the this government, meaning the federal government, were to be exercised by itself, and the limitations on power, if expressed in general terms, are naturally, and we think necessarily, applicable to the government created by the instrument. If these propositions be correct, the Fifth Amendment must be understood as restraining the power of the general government. General government means federal government, not as applicable to the states. In their several constitutions, they have imposed such restrictions on their respective governments as their own wisdom suggested, such as they deem most proper for themselves. It is a subject on which they judge exclusively and with which others interfere no further than they are supposed to have a common interest. So, this is Justice John Marshall, by the way. Chief Justice Marshall made the decision. What he's saying is the Constitution was ordained and established by the people of the United States for themselves and for the federal government, not for the government of the individual states. Now, a little background in this case, I guess, is warranted. Barron had a wharf in Baltimore, Maryland. And he was able to take deep draft ships in to the wharf. City of Baltimore did some dredging in the river, and in so doing, they poured spoil in front of his wharf, where he was no longer able to take deep draft ships. He could only take shallow draft ships, and he said that's a taking and it's a violation of the Fifth Amendment without compensation. So he took the case to the United States Supreme Court, saying that the Fifth Amendment applied. The court then said that it didn't apply, and they're giving their explanation as to why it did not apply. Marshall continues, if the original Constitution in the 9th and 10th sections of the first article draw this plain and marked line of discrimination between the limitations it imposes on the powers of the general government and on those of the states. If in every inhibition intended to act on state power, words are employed which directly express that intent, some strong reason must be assigned for departing from this safe and judicious course in framing the amendments before that departure can be assumed. Had the people of the several states, or any of them, required changes in their constitutions, had they required additional safeguards to liberty from the apprehended encroachments of their particular governments, the remedy was in their own hands and could have been applied by themselves. So he's just said, you know, if they wanted a Fifth Amendment in the Maryland Constitution, they would have put a Fifth Amendment in the Maryland Constitution in the Declaration of Rights. He continues, serious fears were extensively entertained that those powers which the patriot statesmen who then watched over the interests of our country deemed essential to union and to the attainment of those invaluable objects for which union was sought might be exercised in a manner dangerous to liberty. In almost every convention by which the Constitution was adopted, amendments to guard against the abuse of power was recommended. These amendments demanded security against the apprehended encroachments of the general government and not against those of local governments. These amendments contain no expression indicating an intention to apply them to the state governments. This court cannot so apply them. We are of opinion that the provision of the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution declaring that private property shall not be taken for public use without just compensation is intended solely as a limitation on the exercise of the power by that government of the United States and is not applicable to the legislation of the states. Now, if we think back to the concept of the federal Constitution replacing the Articles of Confederation, we're creating a new confederated government, a national government. Concerns were that the federal government would step in then and just dissolve, get rid of the state governments. So the limitations in the Constitution are limitations saying the federal government can't do this, but not that the state government can't do this. That needs to be understood. I mean, we know the background, that they didn't like the idea of a federal government coming in and taking over everything. That's what we object to today. But the states, the people within that state, could choose what they wanted in their constitution, and that constitution then was binding upon their government and set the limitations, the powers, and the authorities of that government, not the federal government, nor did the federal government impose on the states as far as powers, limitations, and authorities. So Barron could not seek remedy from the federal constitution when Maryland took his land without compensation by denying him the deep water aspects of his wharf that he had prior to their dredging the canal. Now, when we look at the authority of the federal government, well, we can look at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, which says that the Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district, not exceeding 10 square miles square, which became Washington, D.C., as may, by secession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be, for the erections of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Okay, so Article 1, Section 8 gave Congress a power to exclusive legislation. Now, this is outside of constitutional constraints. It's exclusive legislation over those certain areas. So we've got people in 1825 that recognize the limitation of power, and 1825, an act titled "An Act More Effectually to Provide for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States and for Other Purposes," that if any person or persons within any fort, dockyard, navy yard, arsenal, armory, or magazine, the site whereof is ceded to and under the jurisdiction of the United States, or on a site of any lighthouse or other needful building belonging to the United States, the site whereof is ceded to them, being the United States, and under their jurisdiction, as aforesaid, shall willfully, and then it goes into the crimes that could be committed. But this was a grant of authority to the federal government. But the extent of their authority, they had to write this law to be able to punish people for damaging government property on land ceded to the government and jurisdiction ceded. Not just the land, but the jurisdiction had to be ceded by the states. Now, that's kind of an area that over the years has some interesting aspects to it. What happens to the territories when the United States retained land? There was various jurisdictions, joint and otherwise. But where land was part of the state and never had federal jurisdiction, unquestionably, that jurisdiction, the land had to be ceded, the jurisdiction had to be ceded. Otherwise, the government couldn't come in and punish criminals who committed certain crimes against the United States. So they understood in 1825, the extension of federal authority was very limited. We have it in Barron. They can't help. We have it in this law where they had to enact this law, but they qualified all the land as being ceded to the federal government and jurisdiction ceded to the federal government. Now, that was an act of Congress in 1825. Now, we're going to go to a Supreme Court decision, which you probably heard of, Marbury versus Madison, and this was in 1803. But it's significant in what Marshall told us, and I think we're all familiar with this. Certainly, all those who have framed written constitutions contemplate them as forming the fundamental and paramount law of the nation, and consequently the theory of every such government must be that an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void. That an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void. So if a law is passed and it doesn't have the constitutional authorization for its passage, it's void. That's what Marshall told us in 1803. Interestingly, North Carolina dealt with the problem prior to that. The case is Bayard v. Singleton. Marbury v. Madison is 5 U.S. 137. 5 U.S. 137, Supreme Court decision. Now, next case, 1787, the year that the convention met to develop the Constitution in North Carolina, Bayard versus Singleton, 1 North Carolina 42, 1 NC 42. That's a North Carolina Supreme Court decision. Now, the case here had to do with Tories who had left the country during the Revolutionary War. In North Carolina, there was a provision in their Constitution that said shall not be deprived of property without due process of law and compensation. And so then the legislature passed a law that said Tories returning have no right or interest in their land. It doesn't matter. They have no right or interest in their land. So the case was taken to the North Carolina Supreme Court, and this is astounding, but this is what they said. But that it was clear that no act that they, meaning the state legislature, could pass, could by any means repeal or alter the Constitution, being the North Carolina Constitution, because if they could do this, they would at the same instant of time destroy their own existence as a legislature and dissolve the government thereby established. Now, think about how strong. If they could do this, pass a law contrary to the Constitution, or without the authority of the Constitution, if they could do this, they would at the same instant of time destroy their own existence as a legislature and dissolve the government thereby established by the North Carolina Constitution. Now, that's pretty strong wording, but this is how they felt 200 years ago in regard to the limitations imposed on government by the respective constitutions, whether they be state constitution or federal constitution. So we'll pick this up with a habeas corpus case in the next episode.